Unfortunately, Harry could not see that Hagrid was putting up a better show than Trelawney. Though he seemed to be following Hermione's advice and had shown them nothing more frightening than a Krupp, a creature indistinguishable from a Jack Russell Terrier, except for its forked tail, since before Christmas, he also seemed to have lost his nerve. He was oddly distracted and jumpy in lessons, losing the thread of what he was saying while talking to the class, answering questions wrongly and glancing anxiously at Umbridge all the time. He was also more distant with Harry, Ron and Hermione than he had ever been before, expressly forbidding them to visit him after dark.
"If she catches you, it'll be all of our necks on the line," he told them flatly,
and with no desire to do anything that jeopardized his job further, they abstained from walking down to his hut in the evenings. It seemed to Harry that Umbridge was steadily depriving him of everything that made his life at Hogwarts worth living. Visits to Hagrid's house, letters from Sirius, his firebolt, and Quidditch. He took his revenge the only way he had, redoubling his efforts for the DA. Harry was pleased to see that all of them, even Zacharias Smith, had been spurred to work harder than ever by the news that 10 more Death Eaters were now on the loose. But in nobody was this improvement more pronounced than in Neville. The news of his parents' attackers' escape had wrought a strange and even slightly alarming change in him. He had not once mentioned his meeting with Harry, Ron and Hermione on the closed ward in St. Mungo's, and, taking their lead from him, they had kept quiet about it too. Nor had he said anything on the subject of Bellatrix and her fellow torturer's escape. In fact, he barely spoke during DA meetings anymore, but worked relentlessly on every new jinx and counter-curse Harry taught them, his plump face screwed up in concentration, apparently indifferent to injuries or accidents, working harder than anyone else in the room. He was improving so fast it was quite unnerving, and when Harry taught them the shield charm, a means of deflecting minor jinxes so that they rebounded upon the attacker, only Hermione mastered the charm faster than Neville. In fact, Harry would have given a great deal to be making as much progress at Occlumency as Neville was making during DA meetings. Harry's sessions with Snape, which had started badly enough, were not improving. On the contrary, Harry felt he was getting worse with every lesson. Before he had started studying Occlumency, his scar had prickled occasionally, usually during the night, or else following one of those strange flashes of Voldemort's thoughts or moods that he experienced every now and then. Nowadays, however, his scar hardly ever stopped prickling, and he often felt lurches of annoyance or cheerfulness that were unrelated to what was happening to him at the time, which were always accompanied by a particularly painful twinge from his scar. He had the horrible impression that he was slowly turning into a kind of Ariel that was tuned into tiny fluctuations in Voldemort's mood, and he was sure he could date this increased sensitivity firmly from his first Occlumency lesson with Snape. What was more, he was now dreaming about walking down the corridor toward the entrance to the Department of Mysteries almost every night, dreams that always culminated in him standing longingly in front of the plain black door.
"Maybe it's a bit like an illness," said Hermione, looking concerned when Harry confided in her and Ron. "A fever or something. It has to get worse before it gets better."
"It's lessons with Snape that are making it worse," said Harry flatly. "I'm getting sick of my scar hurting and I'm getting bored walking down that corridor every night." He rubbed his forehead angrily. "I just wish the door would open. I'm sick of standing staring at it."
"That's not funny," said Hermione sharply. "Dumbledore doesn't want you to have dreams about that corridor at all, or he wouldn't have asked Snape to teach you Occlumency. You're just going to have to work a bit harder in your lessons."
"I am working," said Harry, nettled. "You try it sometime. Snape trying to get inside your head. It's not a bundle of laughs, you know."
"Maybe," said Ron slowly.
"Maybe what?"
said Hermione rather snappishly.
"Maybe it's not Harry's fault he can't close his mind," said Ron darkly.
"What do you mean?" said Hermione.
"Well, maybe Snape isn't really trying to help Harry."
Harry and Hermione stared at him. Ron looked darkly and meaningfully from one to the other.
"Maybe," he said again in a lower voice, "he's actually trying to open Harry's mind a bit wider, make it easier for you, no—"
"Shut up, Ron," said Hermione angrily. "How many times have you suspected Snape? And when have you ever been right? Dumbledore trusts him. He works for the Order. That ought to be enough."
"He used to be a Death Eater," said Ron stubbornly, "and we've never seen proof that he really swaps sides."
"Dumbledore trusts him," Hermione repeated. "And if we can't trust Dumbledore, we can't trust anyone."